The Book Nook on WISO is made possible by six local library systems in Southwest Ohio: the Greene County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Midpoint Library System, Clark County Public Library, the Dayton Metro Library, and the Wright Memorial Public Library.
Good morning. You are listening to WYSO in Yellow Springs. I'm Vic McCunis. We have the Book Nook coming up for you this morning. And today, a memoir written by Annie Campbell with a very provocative title. It's called The Whore Next Door. And this is a very unusual memoir in that each essay, each chapter, has been illustrated by Annie Campbell with a really beautiful watercolor painting. And there are a whole pile of illustrations in this book and some wonderful recollections from her lifetime. We'll be talking to Annie Campbell with The Whore Next Door right after NPR News. Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Annie Campbell. Her new book is The Whore Next Door. It's an illustrated memoir. Welcome to the program, Annie.
Thank you very much.
Annie, this is a very unusual book because you have done an illustration for every single chapter, and they're very short chapters. What a project. How did you get the idea for this?
Actually, I was very ill about 10 years ago or 9 years ago. I had cancer, and I didn't want to be treated by Western medicine because a number of my friends had died from chemo. And so I was just sort of trying to treat myself. And I spent 4 months coughing my brains out, sitting in a sunroom, just letting my mind wander, which I loved. It was a great luxury. Normally, I would feel guilty sitting around, but I felt I couldn't do anything else. I was losing a lot of weight. I was losing strength. And so my mind wandered, and at some point, my dear husband, Harley, told me that if I didn't get treatment, if he didn't take me to Rochester and see what was going on, if I didn't let him, he would have to leave me because he was watching me die and couldn't take that. And so I said, okay, I'll go. And I started being treated with chemotherapy, my one big fear. And I got better very rapidly. I started putting on weight again. I had Hodgkin's lymphoma, and I've been cancer-free all this time. But anyhow, when I started getting stronger, I thought, I feel like going upstairs and writing down this one memory that made me laugh. And it was the one in the book where my friend is naked, showing, she's sort of a female flasher.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote down that story, and then stories started pouring out of me. They're actually memories. They aren't made-up stories. And at some point, I thought, well, maybe I'm writing a book and a memoir. And at that point, I thought, well, I always thought it was horrible when I was a little kid that grown-ups didn't have illustrations in their books. And since I was a painter, I thought, my book's going to have illustrations. So I started writing the book. It took me 3 months, and I wrote the whole thing. And then it took me 9 years to take long breaks from it and go back and edit it and play with it. And I didn't do any of the illustrations until I finished the whole book, because I figured if I cut parts out, what was the point? And that's how it got started. I got over my illness quickly, and I didn't have my nose to the grindstone, so it took me a long time to finish this book. That's what happened.
Annie Campbell joins us. Her memoir is The Whore Next Door, and that story that you mentioned, that was sort of the beginning inspiration about your flasher friend. I'll bet she got some attention.
She did. Well, I was so amused by her, but also shocked, I have to say. But it was lots of fun hanging out with her, and she had eaten so much penny candy, which she later confessed to that's what she was doing, that she had put on weight and couldn't fit into her clothes, so she only wore a raincoat. And when we'd walk out in the street, sometimes if she saw some cute guy, she just would flash him. She wouldn't wear anything under it. And one time she wandered off with a guy from Harvard, or a Harvard-looking type anyhow, when we were in Central Square. And the one time that she really got a lot of attention was when we were on a sort of boardwalk along a ditch that a group of road workers were digging in, and they were all down in it about chest height. And we were walking past them in Haymarket Square, and she just said, "Oh, working men, guys," and pulled open her raincoat, and they dropped their shovels, of course, and just stared. And I was embarrassed but laughing my head off. Thought it was hilarious.
And that is just an example of some of the recollections in this new memoir by Annie Campbell, with the provocative title, The Whore Next Door, which is the first essay or memory that you begin the book with. Tell us about The Whore Next Door.
Well, when I left home, I moved in with my boyfriend, who was living in Michigan, in Lansing, Michigan, because he was a student at Michigan State. And we lived in a little residential house, and we were on the second floor, and there were only two apartments, and ours and the one next to us was the whore next door. And she was named Lois. Actually, honestly, I've forgotten her real name, but I named her Lois.
Mm-hmm.
So she was very sweet to me and would invite me over for homemade apple pie, and she liked to knit, and she would talk to me and tell me stories about her clients. And she worked as a receptionist at a hotel about a block away from our house. And usually she would stay with her clients in the hotel. And she told me that she could recognize when some man wanted to mess around, because she would see that there was a dent where his wedding ring usually was when she signed him up for a room in the hotel. And usually she would stay in the hotel with the man, but sometimes she would bring her clients home. And luckily our little old landlady who lived downstairs was very deaf. And so she never heard what was going on, because she would have called the police, I'm sure. And I actually had to lie to our landlady and say that my boyfriend and I were married, and I wore a wedding ring, which didn't have a dent because I hadn't worn it very long, to pretend that I was married so she would rent to us, because she wouldn't rent to any sinners, she said.
Mm-hmm.
And anyhow, so she would tell me stories, and I give some descriptions of what she would say about her clients in my book.
Annie Campbell joins me. Her memoir is The Whore Next Door. We just heard who the whore next door was, what the inspiration was for that story. And there's all these little short memory in this book that we know from the very beginning that you're going to just tell it like it was. And you're very blunt. You're very honest. You're very straightforward. Is that just the way you are?
Yeah, I think I am. My mother was always like that, and I know when I was really young and she was also young, I think her friends were shocked by her a lot of the time. And my mother was kind of this proper woman who spoke very correct English and always stood up straight and sat straight. And I don't know, she was kind of snobby in some ways. But she was also one of the best dirty joke tellers ever.
Uh-huh.
And she would just have her friends rolling their eyes in shock and, you know, enjoying the joke as well. She liked to shock people. And in a way, I think I sort of got that from her. And I don't really want to shock people, but I don't want to cover up who I really am. And for instance, she told me one time, why don't you wear a bra? This was years and years ago when I was still a young thing. And I said, and I'd already had children, so my breasts weren't young and perky or anything. She said, why don't you wear a bra? You would look so much better. And I said, well, but if I picked somebody up and took them home and they found out that I wasn't young and perky, they'd be so disappointed. I figure they might as well know what I'm like from the beginning. And she would just say, well, I guess that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing shocked her.
Did you really call her Mumsy?
I called her, yeah.
Mumsy. Oh.
Well, and I always referred to her as the Mumsy because she was the boss in the house. Oh. My dad was at work a lot. He was a math professor at Cornell, and he was gone most of the day. And usually when he was home, things were lots of fun. He was a great storyteller, and my parents had a lot of guests, and they were amusing. So but the Mumsy was the boss.
Mm. In case you've just tuned in, you're listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and my guest on the program is Annie Campbell. We're talking about her memoir. It's called The Whore Next Door. The Book Nook will continue right after this. It is The Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and it's my pleasure to have on the program today Annie Campbell. We're talking about her memoir, The Whore Next Door. She joins us by telephone from Trumansburg, New York. Annie, I loved your frankness in this memoir, and you tell us about a lot of difficult times that you went through. You talk about a lot of relationships that you had and men that you were with and some unhappiness that you had. Was this difficult to put on the page? Was it therapeutic? What was it like?
You know, I've always been sort of an ostrich in my approach to life. When things bother me, I ignore them. I stick my head in the sand. And so if you had asked me at any time while I was going through those hard things if I was unhappy, I would have told you absolutely not. Mm-hmm. I believed that I had a wonderful life and that my relationship was fine in a lot of ways. And it was only in retrospect that I sort of went, oh, my God, what was I doing staying in a relationship that was so, it was not constructive or good for my children or for me.
Mm-hmm.
Why did I put up with this? But at the time, for one thing, I was drinking at parties a lot. And if I went out, I would be drinking. I wasn't an alcoholic in that I didn't need to do it every day. But we certainly drank a lot, and we smoked a lot of dope. And I wasn't the greatest mother, because I certainly was doing that stuff in front of my two young children. But it wasn't difficult to write about it, although when I wrote about it, sometimes I would be going, oh, my God, mm-hmm. what the hell was I thinking? You mm-hmm. know, I can't believe I was such a crazy person. Or, for instance, when I wrote about my first marriage and you know, we went and got married by a justice of the peace, and I didn't even tell my poor parents until the day after. And I look back on it, and I think, oh, that poor kid, you know, just just a little girl who doesn't even know what she's doing. Mm-hmm. I almost felt like I was writing about somebody that wasn't even me. So it wasn't difficult to write about it.
Did you have a diary or something you could refer to remember some of the, just it's all right there in your head, huh?
Yeah, I've always had a very good memory, and actually when I was sent away to boarding school because I was such a brat in the middle of 11th grade, when I finally got to 12th grade and was supposed to graduate, my history teacher called me in and said, "How did you cheat on your history test?" And I said, "I didn't cheat." And she didn't believe me. She said, "Well, how could you have scored so well because you've been flunking all year long?" And I said, "Well, I read the book last few days."
Uh-huh.
And so she tested me on another textbook, and she asked me to read as much as I could in a certain amount of time that she would let me read. And then she wanted me to write answers. She would ask me questions, and I had to write the answers and not try to put it in my own words, which I hadn't in my other test, but just put as much as I remembered from the book. And I had no problem passing it. And she said she'd never, you know, encountered anything like that. But I have to say, all my drinking and smoking dope, I guess, kind of did in part of my memory. And I have a very good memory for long ago stuff, but my more recent things, I can't remember what I did last week sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
It really, really embarrasses me and worries me, I have to say.
I think it's just a function of getting a little older. I think it happens to all of us.
That's probably true, too, but
yeah.
I find it alarming after having had a good memory.
Annie Campbell joins us. Her memoir is The Whore Next Door. And as we mentioned in the first segment, she's illustrated every single one of these essays and chapters. Let's talk about your artwork, because it's just really fabulous. It's amazing.
Thank you.
How did you get into this, and how did you get so good?
Well, it all came from being an extremely bad student my whole life and barely getting through high school. And so my parents and my teachers always encouraged me with my drawing because it was something that I was good at and that I enjoyed doing. And so in my family, I was the artist, and my brother and sister were the intellectual ones. And my sister Claudia told me that she wished she could draw, and she always could draw. And I said, "You could draw." And she said, "No, that was your job." And I thought, you know, she was somehow intimidated by it. But I was encouraged. And so since I was about 2 years old, I've been drawing and painting. And not a lot. There were long periods of time, especially after high school, where I didn't draw for a long time. I was just busy doing other things, having children, partying, whatever. I wasn't drawing all the time, but I always would sort of poop out some little painting for my parents for their birthdays, and they always loved it and encouraged me. So that was my training.
Are these mostly watercolor?
These are all watercolor in the book.
The colors are so vibrant. It's amazing.
Yeah, you know, people have said to me that they don't look like watercolors, and I think it's partly because I am self-taught. I never realized that people usually thin the watercolors way down. And I just started out with the little palettes that had paint colors in them, so I would get them nice and thick and goopy and kind of the consistency of very heavy whipping cream and paint like that. And I just developed my style from that. And then I was probably 30 before I found out that you really should use higher quality paints than dime store, you know, palettes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got myself some Winsor & Newton things in tubes. But still, those, when they come out, it's goopy and thick. And so I still used it fairly thick, although, you know, I add water. But it took me a long time to realize you can paint in layers and put thin colors, different colors over each other, or make a color that's not dark enough darker by putting more of the same when the first one dries, the first layer. But that's all been trial and error for me to figure these things out. And I think I have kind of a flat style because I started out with thick colors.
Well, these pictures are just amazing, and I have a lot of favorites. And I think,
you do?
Yeah, and I think one of my real favorites is the one for Lunacy, where you've drawn a picture in this coffee shop. And it obviously is your version of what you could see under the influence of LSD.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. And it was such an astonishing thing for me when it happened, because I had never taken LSD before. I didn't know what was going to happen. And turns out we had some of the purest stuff, because it was made at MIT when all that was beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And here I was in this coffee shop with my brother and a boyfriend, and all these people that were in there all of a sudden started speaking in gibberish, and I couldn't understand a word they were saying. And then they turned into those odd-looking cartoon characters, and I could not stop laughing. I just thought it was so delightful. And, of course, those images really stuck with me, because I'm very visual. It's how I remember things, is by actually seeing them. And so it was easy to paint those things now and remember them. They're part of my, I don't know what, what makes me.
I'm telling you, the pictures are as frank as your prose. And I think when a reader turns the page and they come onto the illustration for the story moving on, they just go,
uh-huh.
Oh, man. Oh, whoa. Whoa.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. You know, a lot of times I felt I don't want to give away what I'm saying in the chapter, because a lot of them have kind of a funny little story or some little incident that makes the chapter, I feel. So since it's not a children's book, I didn't have to illustrate the most important thing that was happening necessarily.
Uh-huh.
But sometimes I do put it in there. But I think that each time I illustrated a chapter, of course, I would read the chapter, and then I would just decide, what am I going to paint? And sometimes I would paint something, and I'd feel like, you know, that just didn't do it. I don't like it. So for some chapters, I painted 3 or 4 or sometimes 5 or 6 different paintings, but I hate copying anything, including myself. So I would have to come up with completely different paintings for the chapter until I found one that I felt like, yeah, that kind of says what I want to say.
Where are all these paintings?
You know, a lot of those I threw in the garbage, but because they were so bad. Some of them, they're still pretty bad, but I saved them, and I'm actually going to do what's called the artist market here in Ithaca soon, and I'm going to take all the ones I didn't throw away and see if I can sell them, along with other paintings. And I am making prints of some of the paintings that are in the book. And so I don't know if I'm allowed to give my website, but
yeah, sure.
At some point I will put the prints on my website. Actually, my children will put the prints on, because I'm a techno idiot.
Uh-huh.
But my website is anniecampbell.org. And a friend of mine said, oh, that's easy to remember. You just say anniecampbell.orgasm.
Perfect.
Which I thought was pretty funny.
So you're not really a technophobe. You get it. You understand.
No, you would be surprised. I am a bit of a technophobe. I, I finally figured out how I can load pictures onto Facebook and stuff like that. My daughter made me join Facebook so that I could promote my book. And actually, I found out it's fun, but I dreaded it. It used to keep me awake at night, just thinking about, God, do I have to learn how to do that?
Well, you're such an incredible painter. Had I known that you were throwing your rejects out in the garbage, I would have been out there rooting around and pulling them right back out again.
Oh, you are so kind to say that.
Well, it's true. I would have been out there. You would have said, who's this guy out there going through the garbage? And it would have been me.
That is so sweet. And my husband, Harley, he said it's really sad that you didn't keep all the ones you did of the chapter called The Letter. There's just a picture of my from the neck up. I wanted to do a self-portrait, and I don't do things from photographs, and so I had to think of myself as a young thing and try to draw myself, just kind of feeling who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And though I did, that's the only one where I did the same thing over and over. I did 26 or 27 portraits of myself before I got that one.
Amazing.
And they were so bad. The first ones looked like they were done by a kindergartner. I mean, really, I could not draw it. But finally I said to myself, you know, I've never, ever drawn a portrait, certainly not a self-portrait. I tried to draw a portrait of my mother once and one of my dad, but those were total failures. But anyhow, once I said, if it takes me 100 times to learn how to draw a portrait, that's not so bad. So I nailed it on the next one, which was number 26 or 27. I can't remember.
Mm.
I felt that I had gotten it. Even though it might not look exactly like me, it looks like I feel. Like I feel I look.
Uh-huh. My guest is Annie Campbell. Her memoir, which she illustrated, is The Whore Next Door. And I'll continue my conversation with Annie in the Book Nook right after this. You're listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. The Book Nook comes your way every Saturday morning during the 7 o'clock hour and every Sunday morning at 10:30. And it's my pleasure to have on the program today Annie Campbell. Her memoir is The Whore Next Door. She joins us on the telephone from the Ithaca, New York area. What was it like to grow up in Ithaca? I hear it's beautiful there.
It is beautiful here. And it's hilly. And there are many Finger Lakes nearby. Ithaca's at the end of Cayuga Lake, the southern end. And I grew up right near Cornell University because my father was a professor there. And I spent a lot of time wandering around in the gorges. There are a lot of gorges that were cut out by the glaciers many, many years ago. And they feed into the Finger Lakes, into Cayuga Lake specifically, where we are. And I went to a three-room school. That was fun. I didn't mind going to that school. But when I went to seventh grade, I hated school and never recovered from that as far as my learning went. And I don't know. What would you like to know about it?
Well, that was plenty. I've heard about the gorges. I hear they're spectacular.
Yeah, they're really wonderful swimming holes, and you can sit under waterfalls. Now there are all sorts of rules, and people aren't allowed to swim in a lot of the places that were my place to swim. And I grew up right on Fall Creek, which is a big little creek that feeds into one of those gorges. And I spent my life really on the water or in the water. I was skating. I liked to skate in the winter and swim in the summer. And my parents would let me swim all by myself starting when I was 9 years old. I was a good swimmer. And I had that creek to myself a lot, which was wonderful. I spent a lot of time just floating around and discovered that getting really cold in the water and then lying in the sun was about the best thing I could do. And I loved it.
This book is one of the most beautifully designed books that I've seen in a long time. What was the process for you? How did you get it and execute the design and make it come out the way you wanted it to?
Well, I always knew exactly how I wanted it to look. And then I actually hired a professional person, a woman, to do the technical part of it because I didn't know how to make it camera ready. My son scanned all the paintings, and so he sent everything to this woman. She was in Ithaca, and so I could go and talk to her and say exactly what I wanted. And she actually picked out the typeface, which I loved right away. And then the two of us sat down and figured out how to do it together because we had a problem in that I always sort of envisioned that the chapter would start on the left-hand side and the picture would be on the right. But, of course, the chapters are not the same length, and so that doesn't work out. And so then I came up with the idea we would start each chapter with a sentence under the picture, and then we wouldn't have blank pages. You know, that way some chapters, of course, have a big space at the end of it. But that worked out, and then she did the rest of putting it together, and I knew exactly what I wanted the cover to be, and I designed that. My son, Storn, helped me do it. And also, I had a friend named Pat Burke who initially kind of put it the way I wanted, and then Storn tweaked it to exactly the way I wanted it. And that was that. And then I found a printer in Canada who was wonderful. The man who was in charge of speaking to me was wonderful and understood what I was saying and what I wanted and sent me a proof of the book when it was done to make sure that it was the way I wanted it, and everything worked out. But it was a long, stressful period when all that was coming together, I have to say, because I didn't really know if I could pull it off. And it wasn't up to me to pull it off, really. It was up to other people at that point.
Storn.
But it worked.
Storn, who you mentioned is your son, your oldest child.
Yeah.
Early on in the interview, you mentioned that you thought, well, you know, as I remembered, maybe I wasn't that great of a mother. But it sounds like your kids turned out just fine.
My kids did turn out fine, despite having a crazy woman. And we've always been very close. Cody and I had some headbutting when she was a teenager, but nothing compared to what my poor mother had to endure with me. And Storn and I are similar in a lot of ways. We've always been close, and both of my kids moved away, and they both moved back to the Ithaca area, and so I love that. And Storn's very happily married, and my daughter Cody is happily engaged, and we love both of these people that are in our lives because of them, and so it's great.
Storn, that's an unusual name. Is it Scandinavian?
No, actually, his dad and I, when I was pregnant, did this thing where he would choose three or four letters, and I would choose three or four letters, and then we would take his first, my first, his second, my second, and so on, and make up names. And, of course, lots of times there were too many consonants or too many vowels in a row, but sometimes we'd get names that were kind of cool. And so one time we got Stornvar, and I said, let's knock off the var. I like Storn, but get rid of the var part. So we had Storn, and then we got Zendier, Xindier, Zendier. And, Zendir. And so we gave him that legally as a middle name, but when it was time for him to go to kindergarten, I was so embarrassed to tell them that that was his name. I just said his name was Storn Alexander and dropped the Zendir. Alexander was also on his certificate. But that's how he got it.
That's a great story. Who would have ever guessed?
Yeah. You know, there was a woman in married housing when I had Storn who said she loved the name so much that she was going to name her child Storn when he was born. Well, she wasn't even pregnant. Years later, maybe 10 years later, I mean 10 years ago, Storn got an email from a guy named Storn, and he told that story that his mother wanted to name him Storn after my Storn. And that he wasn't born for another 7 years after my Storn was born, but she did name him Storn.
The only two Storns on the planet. Actually,
yeah.
There's probably some in Sweden. It sounds like a Scandinavian name to me for some reason.
It does. It really does. And a lot of people have said that to me, but I don't know any Storns.
You have a chapter in here that's about your brother and experience that he had in San Francisco. It's just simply called John. And I'm wondering, how does your family feel about this book? Because I'm guessing your brother said, that's cool, you can tell people that.
Absolutely. He said, no problem. He thought it was funny. And also the one where he says Tyrannosaurus Rex, where he's a little kid. I asked him if he minded that. He said, no, of course not. I don't care. That's how he would say it. That's what he said. My poor parents are dead. My mother did get to hear a bunch of the chapters before she died. And she said to me, you know, I am really surprised. You write very well for such an idiot.
How sweet.
Which was her way of, you know, sort of joking with me. She doesn't think I'm an idiot or didn't think I was an idiot, but she certainly thought I was unteachable. She said because I was so bad in school and I wouldn't do things that she wanted me to do, she always said that I was unteachable.
Well, I'm a person who reads a lot of books, and I also enjoy a good conversation, and I feel like conversation is kind of a vanishing art. We try to keep it alive on this program. And I also believe that in our modern time that proofreading seems to be a lost art, because I read a lot of books on major publishing houses that have all kinds of typos in them and proofreading errors, and it drives me absolutely crazy. And I could not find any proofreading errors in your book, and I applaud you. You did a splendid job on that. Maybe there's one in there. I just didn't see it.
I have to tell you, I had a wonderful editor who was my best friend from high school, who was a professional. And she volunteered to edit my book. What a darling she is. Mm. I also had a wonderful friend, have a wonderful friend, who is an editor and who did the line editing. And so she did a fantastic job. But there is one typo that I came across, and it's in the chapter called, I think it's Sexcapade. And it's the first sentence, so it's right under the illustration. And the sentence, I think, starts out, all I could think about was sex, except that the typo is, there's an F, and then there's the word sex. And I thought, wow, what a perfect typo. All I could think about was sex. I thought that was hilarious. But honestly, I have not read the book since it was printed, so I don't know if there are typos in there that I might see, but I hope there aren't.
Yeah, I missed that one for some reason. Well,
maybe you thought it was supposed to be there.
Maybe so. And that's true, though, in the book, that you do spend a lot of time thinking about sex, don't you?
Yes. I didn't feel like that's what the main thing was when I was writing it. I just thought it was one of the many things. But when the newspapers in Ithaca interviewed me, and there were three articles on me, one of them was really focused on that I talked about sex and thought about sex and wanted to have sex pretty much nonstop. And I thought, that's what I was like at that age, I guess. you know, but I didn't feel like that's what I was writing about necessarily, but I guess I was.
Well, you're very candid. You're very frank, and it's unexpurgated.
Yeah, but it's not pornographic.
No.
I don't put in the gory details.
Not too much.
Yeah. There are a couple of things that are a little shocking.
Occasionally, a few things slip through, but yeah, you're right. It's very entertaining.
Well, I have a friend who is, I think she's 93. I gave her the book.
Uh-huh.
She read it, and I said, was there anything in there that shocked you? And so she said, yes, there was one thing. And I said, what was it? And she said, I just never knew that people were effing, she said the actual word,
uh-huh,
effing around like that back then. Which I thought was hilarious because she happens to have 8 daughters.
Oh, okay.
And I know them, and they were, I mean, I don't know them well. I don't know that all of them were doing that, but I do know that they grew up in a time when we were all doing that sort of thing, and I thought it was cute that she said that.
Well, it really is a wonderful snapshot of the 60s. And that was when you were just, you know, coming of age.
I feel so fortunate because I think I grew up in the only period in the history of the world when you didn't have to worry about venereal disease. The pill just came into being, so you didn't have to worry about pregnancy. AIDS had not reared its ugly head. You didn't have to worry about that. And there was a huge movement where everybody just kind of did whatever they wanted to and had a jolly time. Of course, there were a lot of people who were not like us, but there was a big, big group of people that were just having a wonderful time being hedonists,
mm-hmm,
basically. Even though the Vietnam War was very present and part of our lives, we smoked our dope and drank our drinks and carried on and had a good time, you know, and felt terrible about things that were happening to other people, but we managed to have a lovely time. So I feel like I was extremely lucky, like, in that way.
I understand that you live in a little tiny town outside of Ithaca called Trumansburg. What is that like there?
What's it like here?
Yeah.
Well, it's sort of like a little storybook village. There are gigantic trees and old houses. The one I live in was built in 1900, which is not that old, but there are quite a number of Greek revivals. That's more like 1840s, 1860s, around there. The town was quite run down in the 70s, and then it's been revived a lot of it by all the what were the young hippie carpenters bought houses that were cheap and fixed them up around here, and it was sort of more a Republican town, and it's kind of crossing over into a more liberal situation. The old guard is not in charge as much. So it's a lot. There are a lot of very young couples with children and a lot of people my age and older. And there's the bongo, the bar that I worked in for a long time is still here. It's opened and closed and open and closed, but somehow it keeps on puttering along right now. It's in a good phase. And there's a bowling alley restaurant which plays really great music, and they have excellent food, and that's fun to go to. None of us bowl, but we like to eat there. And there's a really great restaurant that could be in New York City or Paris, France, and do well. It's so good. And they're regular sort of Italian-American restaurants and great pizza places, and there's a high school, middle school, and grade school, 3 buildings in a row. And, it's, I think a lot of people from Cornell and Ithaca College are sort of looking at moving in this direction because it's nice and quiet here.
Sounds like a wonderful, wonderful little town.
Yeah, Ithaca's still a wonderful place, but it's become extremely crowded, and so the people who can't afford to live there, who used to live there, have been driven out, and the traffic is getting pretty damn nasty, or it is nasty.
Mm-hmm.
So Ithaca, which, of course, was my hometown, is too big for me. I like Trumansburg.
Well, I think it's impressive that a town that small can support a bowling alley and all those great restaurants, and it sounds idyllic.
It's only in the last five years maybe that many things are thriving. It just seems to be this up and coming place, and we were lucky to move here when the good stuff was happening. We lived 10 miles away out on our farmette, which I talk about in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually were driven out of there by a beautiful family farm further up the road from us, a mile away or so, that grew so big. They were milking 3,000 cows a day, 24 hours a day. And that translated into endless trucks going up and down our dirt road so that we didn't like to open our windows. And you can imagine the amount of cow manure spread around us and pesticides. And luckily for us, a young woman wanted our house for 6 years. She asked if she could have it. She loved the place where we lived, and it was really fantastic with two ponds, and we had 35 acres and barns, and we had animals for a long time. And she's a veterinarian, and she came from a big city, I think, and she said that it's still country to her, and she didn't mind. She knew all about the farm up the road, so everything worked out really well. And even though Harley and I thought we would live and die there because it was paradise, we are so happy in our new place. And it's been wonderful to live in Trumansburg. And, of course, we knew a lot of people here anyway. And now we've met neighbors that we didn't know, and they're all just great. Love them.
Well, we're running out of time here, but I would like to just mention, as we let you go, Annie, that your husband, Harley, is originally from Dayton, Ohio.
He is. And he's written two books, which are great, but he's stuck them in a drawer and doesn't want to do anything with them for a while. But one of these days, maybe he will.
Well, bless his heart. And thank you
They're
so
good.
Much.
They're really good.
Sounds good to me. You let me know. Annie, it's really been nice talking to you.
Thank you so much, Vic. I really appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. My guest has been Annie Campbell. Her memoir, which she illustrated, and you would not believe these illustrations, is The Whore Next Door. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis.